sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Economy is, well, slowing and gaining at the same time. Earnings are not looking so good, and we are going to talk about mutant trading with technical analysis at the core with our guest John Logan from TASS Professional today. We got lots to talk about, so sit tight and get ready for this episode, number 285 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, howdy, October 22nd, 2012. Is coming on us, and we have a lot happening with regard to earnings this week. As a matter of fact, there is a mountain of earnings announcements that will be happening this week before the market opens on Monday. We're going to talk about Caterpillar. We got Freeport, McNamara. We got Wynn Resorts, Yahoo, AK Steel, Lexmark. I mean, that's just, you know, in the first couple of days here. Then we got to go through Whirlpool and Coach, and boy, oh boy, it is going to be a very action-packed week, especially on the heels of that Google disaster that we saw last week, not to mention all the other companies that are coming out and showing that the outlook does not look so good. Tech has definitely been taking it on the chin, and we're going to see what happens with Facebook, who's going to come out with their second earnings on the 23rd. And kind of looking across the board, I put up an earnings cheat sheet for the announcements that will be coming up this week, and you have to take a look at that over on the disciplinedinvestor.com. You can download it, and you can see the key earnings that will be coming out this week. And I think that's something that you should follow very closely, because if we continue to see some of the downbeat earnings numbers and outlooks and guidance and management conversation about the world economy slowing, even with QE to infinity and with talks breaking down in Europe about the oversight for the banks, with the ECB, and of course with Germany getting a little bit feisty again, you have to wonder where we're going to go from here. Can we really hold up in the face of IBM slowing down and, seeing that Google's slowing down, some of the worst numbers they've seen in some time. You're seeing also Microsoft throwing the towel a little bit. But we'll see what happens when we come to much of the week. So, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of companies reporting. Pay attention to that. In addition to that, we have economics that you need to pay attention to, right? We have the new home sales after last week's disappointing existing home sales. New home sales are expected to increase again. 385,000 is the number that they're looking for, and that will be out on the 24th. And we're also going to be seeing the durable goods orders on the 25th. Now, the durable goods orders, which flopped down 13.5% last month, is expected to rebound a bit to about plus 7% this month. And that would be an increase, but again, from a very, very low base. And, you know, the question is going to be, was it timing of the report that was way out of whack and that's what happened, or is there really something more to it? Same thing we could say about what happened with the initial claims last week, that we saw that the initial claims spiked higher after we saw that really glorious number the previous week of in the 330,000 range. But all of this really, you know, it matters, but what you want to look at is, you know, what's happening with markets? Where are we with this? What is going to be the outlook for it? Are we below? Are we above? Where is the trend going to be? And I think that's going to be a good discussion that we have with John Logan in a moment. Before we get there, I want to mention a couple of things. First of all, I want to mention that we did, in fact, have a very good week in terms of putting up a lot of great information on Stocktoberfest. We're doing about two or three stocks a day on Stocktoberfest. And you need to take a look at that over on the Disciplined Investor to find out what our analysis is and our in-depth look at the technicals and fundamentals on each of this. And thank you all for who sent in their requests. We're getting them all up there as soon as we have a whole schedule on the site as well. The other thing I want to mention before we get too far here is that there's been some really interesting news coverage of what happened with Google. You know, the printing company and the publishing company for the earnings report put it out early, and you know, that halt that we saw hours on end on Thursday was really quite unusual when it comes to Google. But the stock did drop about 9%, and we did see also the following day about another 2%. Chipotle Mexican Grill, which we had in our portfolios, we paired it back prior to the earnings announcement to just about a 1% position or less than that. They really just came out horrible, and the restaurants are just looking really awful in terms of their response to what's happening in the pricing market of grains and various food products and maybe a bit of a slack demand. So, you know, that's kind of what you need to be watching for. Even though the consumer confidence numbers have been pretty good, the question is going to be, you know, really, how is that going to play out? Are they really saying what they mean and doing what they say, or something else going on? I want to mention before we get to our guest, we also have the final debate coming up this week. It was a bit of a different face of President Obama after what happened in the first debate. And he came out really with a much better, I think, overall mode, mannerisms. His attack mode, or his at least defense mode, was much more fine-tuned. I think that there was something, I don't know what it was. You know, we'll chalk it up to just a bad day, that first debate. But we'll see that how that goes, and then how the polls are going to be playing it. Right now, it looks like it's kind of a neck-and-neck race between the two, at least with a margin of error. But we're going to see all that, and we're going to see how this unfolds with the FOMC minutes next week, with their, or at least with their, you know, they're coming out with their statement and the actual rate decision, which I don't think will be much different. But how much lower can the rates go, right? Before we get to everything else, let's also talk about GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is one of those things that you just have to have if you are, if you're doing business, or if you're even just, you know, in school, or if you have a family. GoToMeeting is one of those great products done by Citrus. You do it from your iPad, you could do it from a computer, whether it's a Mac or a PC. And basically what happens is magic, because not only can you see each other as you're talking and share screens, at least share the information that you're trying to communicate, but you have a lot of great opportunity to interact and to work and collaborate together, which you don't have in a usual telephone call or an email or a text message. And with GoToMeeting, basically without any major software installations, very easy to do right in your web browser. You can have a meeting at the instant you want it and share the data, whether it's a PowerPoint presentation or maybe it's the web browser, whatever you want to do, you could share it right there very easily. And the nice thing is with GoToMeeting, you can download it and use it on your iPad. It's free, and you can get a 30-day trial of all the bells and whistles for free. Simply go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code podcast. And for that, you get 30 days of unlimited use, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. We use it a lot. I think it's a great product to have around. One of the things I also put up on the website, on the Disciplined Investor, it's a busy week over there coming up for some things that we're putting, is the important key levels of support for the S&P 500. We're reaching some important points of support and areas that we need to pay attention to. And that's exactly why our next guest is one that I think is going to be very much someone you want to hear. And we're going to get into some of the details probably, because that's how John and I talk when we talk about some of these things. When it comes to the commodities, it comes to the futures markets, as well as what you can do about it. We're going to put a lot more of this so you can follow it on the site as well. So, you know, I think it's something you want to listen to. So what I thought we would do is spend some time on the technical side of things. You know, for a while we've been talking about the economy and earnings, which we know what's going on there. We've been talking about Europe. We've been talking about China. And you know what? As my good friend Brian Shannon says, it's only price that pays. So when we look at the charts and we look at what's happening, we could really get a better insight as to what's going on with the markets and maybe directionally get some ideas of what to do. So with that, what I want to do is bring a good friend of mine, John Logan, on, who is the president of TASS Professional. He's also the founder of TASS Professional. You know, when I talk about those algorithms and I talk about Trigger Point Research and the partner that we went to come up with this trading platform that gives us signals, well, John was the guy. And basically what we're talking about is looking at things that are based on price and value and an algorithm. So, John, we're going to talk about some good stuff today, right?
Absolutely, Andrew. We're going to take a look at what the TASS Professional information really looks like, a little bit of background on it, and also try to pair that with what's going on with a couple of choice instruments that I think we've decided we were going to look at today.
Yep.
And, you know, those are the kind of the usual suspects, the household names, the golds of the world, the 10-year treasury of the world, the things that actually people look at and the things that the market looks at to kind of get a barometer on where the stock market should go in general.
So, you know what, one of the interesting things is that, you know, a lot of times when you talk about technical analysis, people are looking at the support points where they just draw a line, they look at a rising wedge, they look at the 50-day moving average, they look at all these different, you know, kind of classical levels, they look at MACD and stochastics. This is a whole different animal, right?
Yes, it is. It actually, instead of kind of pairing volume with time, this is necessarily pairing volume with price and kind of looking at things a little differently and trying to figure out where a fair auction is within the marketplace that larger institutions and commercial players have decided that is the area that they decided to pick their battles, you know, trade with each other, where those inflection points are in general, and how to trade on the same side of the market as those players instead of trading, you know, primarily on the same side of the market as retail players.
Right. So this gives the edge to, I mean, really what happens here is it gives the edge to retail traders that they can get, as I see it, kind of like an X-ray view of the markets of where things are happening. And I think that the best way to describe when you talk about the value areas and the areas of value and price is, you know, where are they really stepping in? Because at one hand, you can look at a price and you can say, well, there's some support there, but really how much support is there? And that's all based on how much the players are really putting up their own money into the deal, right?
Right. I mean, basically, you're finding out where the activity was relative to price and where the activity was not relative to price, and how that forecasting of knowing that will work in the future to your advantage. And, you know, a guy a long time ago told me something very important. I've always tried to remember it. Successful trading is supposed to be boring. And what I think we've done with this, instead of exciting, if you want the excitement, you're going to pay for it, Andrew. You know that.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've done is basically created a roadmap with, you know, inflection points and biased directional components around those inflection points, to where it's almost you are automatically making a decision instead of subjectively trying to figure out what you should do at this point. At that point, it's a very rules-based, you know, diagram, if you will, to maneuver through the minefield of trading in general.
So what I thought we'd do is, let's go through, you do daily videos for a variety of institutions. So what I thought we would do is bring that here today, some of that, and talk about it. And I'll put some of the charts up, the snapshot charts of the actual instrument, whether it's going to be corn or gold or whatever it is, on the show notes for this episode, so that when you're listening out there, basically what you could do is you can follow along some of the things that John's describing here. So why don't you want to start with corn? What do you want to start with?
We can start with corn. Let me pull up corn myself here.
Now, one of the things I know, John, because I know his routine, I know what he does in terms of his process. A couple of things he looks at is not just a daily, not just maybe a weekly, but you look at a variety of time periods. You look at them because you kind of can get a flow of what's happening from the shorter time frames to the longer time frames. What's the longer time frame, for example, telling us? But, you know, but at the same time, well, is there a change of the general trend? And you can see that maybe show up in a shorter time frame, but much more efficiently. So looking at a weekly, looking at a daily, a 240-minute, a 60-minute, which is probably the lowest you want to look at. But corn's been all over the place.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been very it's been very news-driven lately, because I think there's a lot of tension and stress amongst, you know, the people who have to accumulate and buy corn, i.e., the hog producers, the turkey producers, the cattle, that type of marketplace really depends on having or forced. They are forced to buy, the soy meal, the corn, the wheat, as fodder really to feed animals. And that's not a negotiable situation. They can't stockpile enough at a certain price at a certain time during the year. So they kind of, are really hinging upon what the current price is and how to buy those pullbacks in price. Or step out of the marketplace altogether and wait for those downdrafts to happen so they can pick some stuff up cheaper. Corn in particular, with this we're getting into fundamentals a little bit, but with this ethanol, possible reduction plan, which seems to be on the horizon, because, you know, these accumulators of, that have to deal with the feed issue, You know, corn may go to $10 a bushel. It may go to $5 a bushel, but it may go to $10 a bushel based on scarcity. And if, you know, ethanol production is scaled back and pared off by the federal government, possibly even mandating that it had to be scaled off, corn prices will fluctuate, you know, on a relative scale to that. But, you know, technically speaking, what we try to do is we try to kind of, believe it or not, throw all that out the window and use what we know is, you know, how do we analyze price action? Because right now, regardless of all the fundamental news, everything's baked in the cake as far as what the price is currently and what the inflection points that we feel are and have happened, and how do we forecast that in the future to our advantage. So to really further this whole concept of using what we have, you know, we feel like we're providing an edge to be right more often than wrong, right? And the real key to this is, you know, if me and you were flipping a coin, Andrew, and we said, hey, you know, every time you win, Andrew, I'm going to give you a dollar, but every time I win, you got to give me $3. That's not fair, you know, but if I weight the coin to be more favored in my side of the fence and I'm right 60% of the time and you're right 40% of the time, it actually exponentially gets worse for you. And kind of that's the same situation in a nutshell is what we're offering. We're saying, hey, we feel like we're giving you a chance to leverage the bet. We feel like we're giving you a chance to be right more than wrong. And when you're right, we want you to make $5. And when we're wrong, you want to stop yourself out losing a dollar. I know I've said a lot in the last 5 minutes, but that's the general concept.
Oh, that's good. I mean, that's important. I think that the whole idea, you know, and you can go back to the casino concept, not that I'm relating this to that, but, you know, the right. House has the odds in their favor. They know they can lose, but, you know, they know what their downside, you know, is generally because they know what the overall numbers are. They have a set of rules. You know, the House in blackjack plays by rules. First of all, if the House plays by rules and the player plays by the identical rules, there's still an edge to the House because the rules are created to bring the odds in favor of the House. But on the other hand, what happens is a lot of times in blackjack, somebody says, oh, I just don't feel like a good card's going to come out. So even though I should hit on this, I'm not going to. You know, or something opposite. You know, and what happens is the same thing in investing, I think. And by the way, it's everybody because there is some human nature involved. I mean, if you just can't be totally robotic. I mean, you try to go by the rules. But basically what happens is that people are either in love with something, you know, and they're not going to let it go until it's the wrong time because the pain is so great. Or they're not going to get onto something because they're like, no way can that do well. And, you know, they kind of miss the boat on that. So if they did follow rules, on the other hand, you know, you kind of throw out the name, whether the name is something you like, you don't like. If it's something like, you know, hey, you should have shorted Apple XYZ or whatever stock it may be, and you don't have, well, it's Apple. How can I do that? It's a great company. Or if it's a horrible company, you know, something that's just really awful, or a commodity, you may not look at it the same. You may look at it from a three-dimensional view is what, you know, kind of what this is in without the background noise. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, everything you said is absolutely 100% true. Would you like to just kind of go ahead and get into like a real-time analysis?
Yeah, get it on, man. Get it on.
Okay. I know everybody's kind of sitting on the edge of their seat wanting to really kind of, what is this thing and what does it look like and how do I use it to my advantage?
Right. I got people knocking on the door already. I see it.
Right. So what we're looking at really, first of all, is we're going to look at December corn. And that's the one that everybody's, you know, that's the pressure point for the grain market right now is what is corn doing? Because corn really in the grain plot, in the grain complex in general is the driving component for wheat prices right now, soybean to some degree, soy meal. So the alternatives really for feed are soy meal, corn, and wheat. So as the corn market acts, those other products on a relative scale, I don't even want to get into this, but they kind of have to go in tandem because they're alternative feed choices. All right.
Well, you have to, but let me just say something. There is farmers now that are using used candy. You saw that, right? They call them the Jolly Ranchers.
Haven't heard that one.
Yeah, actually. No, I saw it. They're using they just can't pay for the feed. But anyway, go ahead.
That's got to be healthy. So what we're looking at here is, you know, again, we need to, you know, kind of have a dissertation on this, probably a little bit longer. But in a nutshell, we're looking at December corn, and we're looking at three lines in particular on our screen right now. And between that green line, just putting this in layman's terms, and the upper red line on a weekly, that is what we consider the fair auction. All right, and that is where We have predicted moving out into the future that the fair auction would be, and if we're below there, we need to act a certain way, and if we're above there, we need to act a certain way. So right now on a weekly, we have used this lower part, what we call the unfair low, as a sticking point, really, or an inflection point or a leverage point for our longs and our shorts. Right now, corn has reached into this 767 area and bounced off as of Friday from below. And that is, you know, just looking at our weekly view alone, this will be something that I would say, you know what, hey, we're at an opportune area that doesn't happen that often. We're right at the major inflection point. We're coming up to that inflection point from below. This might not be a bad time to leverage a short trade. And guess what? The stops are relatively close above that green line. That is our resistance line in this instance. Okay.
Now that's on a weekly basis. So that's on a weekly, right?
That's on a weekly. But let's drill down into the daily. So as I'm drilling down into the daily, I'm also noticing, and remember that longer term time frames take precedence over shorter term time frames every time. So those inflection points on longer term time frames on weeklies take precedence over dailies, take precedence over 240 minute charts, take precedence over 60 minute charts, and so on down the line. So right now, we're looking at a daily, and price action actually has gone above the unfair high on a daily and come back and met it. All right, just looking at those two charts alone and understanding what I've said, the more, and you're trying to, again, put probabilities in your favor, the more confirming action to put on the short would actually be to let corn open Monday morning. If it can, go below the unfair high on our daily, which is right now at 760. If we creep down below, guess what? You're below the unfair high in the fair auction on a daily, and you're actually below the fair auction on a weekly, and that is a double confirmation to some degree. It's not the most opportune short situation, but you've got a leverage situation that you can try to take advantage of with probabilities in your favor on the short side with stops relatively tight above the weekly unfair low. So what did I just say in understandable English? Right now, you would want the price action to migrate a little bit farther south if you wanted to short this product to below 759, let's just say 757, 56, 55. That way you would know the shorts have a little bit more control over this marketplace, and you are looking at targets, and let's just reiterate what we talked about risk-reward ratios. You're looking at targets of 748 and 737 on the short side on corn. But you know your stop threshold for pain is more than likely about 6 or 7 points higher. All right. So you've got a situation where your risk reward scenario is literally approaching 7 to 9 to 1. All right. And that particular trade, if you think about it mathematically, you can put that trade on 5, 6 times and be wrong. And the one time you're right, without getting stopped out and taking advantage of those targets on the P&L side, you actually have made money. Now, the probabilities are you're more than likely not going to lose 6 out of 7 trades with this. But if you do, guess what? You're still a winner.
Right.
And that's the kind of odds and that's the kind of leverage that we're talking about with those risk-reward scenarios. I haven't even drilled down into the 240, but let's do that. Let's take a look at our 240. All right, considering that the bottom of our box on our 240, bottom of our fair auction, unfair low is at 758, guess what? That coincides with our daily unfair high at 759. And you've also got another time frame that will be a confirming instance of a really nice short play with stops right above as soon as you get below that 5859 area. But you have to wait until that happens. You have to sit on your hands if you want to be short this instrument. Conversely, if you think corn will go up, and this is not guaranteed to go up or go down. I mean, the market is a very finicky woman. You want to look at. Did I offend any women out there by saying that?
No. Okay, I'm offended.
Okay, good. You would actually want until price action goes above 767 on the weekly unfair low. And more than likely, hopefully, close above that this week. And that way, you're above the unfair high on the daily, and you're above the unfair low on the weekly, which is a great confirming mindset to get long the instrument. And those are simple rules that we use, Andrew, that, you know, are kind of posted in some areas on our website and things like that. But, you know, that's a very simple set of rules that we have for trading this methodology.
So let's just kind of break this down a little bit, and so that people aren't confused, like, what is unfair high, unfair low? First of all, there are lines drawn with an algorithm that take in consideration price and volume and a variety of other trend factors that go into this to create a level during a certain time frame that is the gives you the odds in your favor of where it's going to either break down, break up, or consolidate through.
Is that if I may interject here, for people who have had some exposure to, you know, any statistical class or any kind of, you know, looking at a, you know, report at their business or whatever, you would kind of pair it and make an analogy, which is a very correct analogy, to a bell curve. And that most well-traveled part of that bell curve, you would consider where most of the sample data would lie within, is that, you know, let's just say, I think in a bell curve, you've got like 83% of the data usually lies within a certain part of the bell curve. It's the same situation with the fair auction. And when you get outside those, you know, meaty parts of those bell curves, you know, that's what's considered a fair part of the sample in there. So anything goes within that sample. And, you know, if you're at one extreme limit of that bell curve, you know, data sample that's supposed to be average, if you get outside there, then you should be able to take advantage of those areas because they're not actually, you know, regular sample parts of the average sample. So right. I know I kind of went around the
bush. Yeah, the other way to look at it is, I mean, they talk about standard deviations, and one standard deviation from the bell curve from the center mean is about 67.5%. 82.5% is two standard deviations, which really is the majority of all the observations within that time period, within that select grouping. So what you're saying is that most of the bell curve, if you just look at a bell curve, about 83% of all the observations will fall within there, and then you have the outliers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about like where that meaty part is, that big, the bell part, if you will, mm-hmm. is really between these levels. Once you get outside of there, now you have a whole new scenario built.
You actually have almost like a mutant or rogue piece of data, if you want to look at it that way. And then that particular data, since it doesn't even fall within the average situation, is going to act very volatile, move very quickly as far as price action goes, because there's really no you know, previous price action, so to speak, in this example, to really substantiate that acting normal, if you will. So as these price actions go above and beyond these fair auction areas or meaty part of the bell curve areas, if you will, they're going to move relatively quick. And that brings us to a whole nother discussion maybe next time about, you know, when do you want to place trades? Do you want to place trades where you can take advantage of things in a very short time frame that's compressed, where price action moves very quickly in a shorter time frame because you can possibly, hopefully, make more money in a shorter term time frame without actually having to hold the instrument very long? That's why people, you know, you have to ask yourself these things, because that's why people fall in love with shorting stocks or shorting everything in general, because, you know, instruments usually fall faster than they rally.
Right.
And those are that's why people are like, oh, I can make all this money if I short it and catch it right. Well, that's a very bad thing to fall in love with, by the way. But you know, that's the same type principle. We're going to enter holes in the marketplace around these bell curves where you can take advantage of those holes in the marketplace.
And you know what, John? I mean, obviously, when anybody that's looked at the trigger point research alerts and you see the charts that we put up and you see these lines that are drawn in terms of when an alert is triggered, which deals with a lot of the same things we're talking about here, and also when it deals with you know, these fast zones, these holes, these mm-hmm. you know, these kind of areas of outside the area. I like that, you know, those mutant areas. I like mm-hmm. that. those are the areas, whether it's on a long or a short, that you could see that kind of movement, and that's what we look for on stocks through trigger point research. But let's kind of, everybody wants to talk about gold. You know, there's this love affair with gold that, you know, people who believe the end of the world is coming, inflation's happening. I mean, all the different mm-hmm. fundamental reasons. But let's kind of skip by all of that mm-hmm. and let's just talk about some price action, because gold has been kind of rolling down a little bit here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's kind of taken a back seat. You know, I mean, this is, again, fundamentals. I think it's taken a back seat lately to, you know, kind of people literally focusing on the election and a couple other things that are happening in the world, you know, general marketplace. And I think there's been some kind of rotation out of gold temporarily. And I think that, you know, since there wasn't any carry through, I mean, there's a huge rally we had, obviously. I think it was, what, about
a month ago. Yeah.
Six or 8% rally in gold, 6% maybe. You know, that's a pretty strong rally, but I think a lot of people are looking for more. And usually, you know, as we know, the retail investor gets in late. Maybe they jumped on the bandwagon late. Now, you know, the game is to not, there's no free lunch. And, you know, a lot of times markets will pull back to eliminate, you know, the weak hands that are holding the money.
Yeah, it's called shaking them out.
Exactly. And so, but, you know, technically speaking, forgetting all the fundamental stuff I just said, you know, we're looking at a weekly, daily, and even smaller time frame breakdown technically of the trend itself. And that's when, you know, you previously were looking for support areas to buy, mm-hmm. even up until Friday, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. and trying to pick your battles on support areas because the long-term trend was still in force. But now you've actually had a weekly close below long-term support. And now you actually need to, well, you know, I'm not telling you how to trade, but you actually would be, you know, probability-wise, your trading might be more effective because there really aren't any support areas that are valid considering what broke down to look at resistant former support areas that are now resistance to be, maybe there's a change in trend and we may tick down for a while in gold.
So now, you know, the other thing is there's another few tools that we use kind of internally. I know you use also to get kind of trend confirmation, and that we call that the Navigator, for example. Mm-hmm. Where's the slope of that? Now, let me just kind of mention this, that this is kind of important. When you look at the overall levels, you know, you could see sometimes consolidation of a stock trend or a commodity trend, right? So everybody could think about that as kind of this area where it kind of doesn't go really much above, it doesn't go below, and it could be on a longer-term situation or a shorter-term situation, but it's kind of like bouncing around where there's some people saying, hey, that's the top, I'm going to sell out, and they get to the bottom, they buy mm-hmm. in. They, mm-hmm. But then the bigger issue is, okay, but how is that really happening? Because if you see a little bit of a move higher, and it's kind of, but what strength is it? What is the real power of it? And do we see a divergence in some of the underlying components of it? And you could kind of tell that with another indicator called the Navigator, and mm-hmm. we have something called T-score and a few other things that we bring it all together. But the gold, what is the Navigator looking like?
Well, I'd like to, you know, preface talking about the Navigator with the idea that, you know, what we just talked about was just one component of the puzzle. And we talked about the fair auction and talked about the media part of the bell curve and things like that. What you'd really like to do as a trader is to have as many confirming elements for, you know, factoring in whether you're going to go long or short into the equation in general. So Navigator is another component that we use as a confirming or, you know, divergent, like you just said, piece of information or confirming piece of information to give us a biased directional component around some of these inflection points. Because, you know, anybody can say, okay, we're at an inflection point. Well, what do? Do you go short or do you go long? I mean, like, you know, it's kind of a breakout above or a breakout below area. And, you know, how do you know how to leverage your bet from the long side or the short side? So what we're going to do is we're going to try to factor in a couple of more technical indicators that we've developed into, hey, we've got, you know, four indicators that say go long and one that says go short. Okay, well, I'm going to, you know, obviously, I mean, being a kind of a probabilities kind of guy, I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to go long because that's where the probabilities are. And I'm going to put my stops down below because I can always be wrong. And 4 out of 5 doesn't always mean that the 1 out of 5 is going to not be right. Okay.
Yep.
So talking about Navigator in general, that's just one of the, you know, the puzzle components. And I'm looking at Navigator on a weekly gold situation. And we had Navigator is more of a smoothing component to kind of, you know, okay, is it making higher highs with price action? Is it making lower highs with price action going up? And that would be considered a divergent piece here. But on a weekly basis, we actually have had Navigator turn down, which is as of this past weekly bar close, which is, you know, considered very bearish. It's not below zero. And I don't know if everybody's looking at this right now.
I'm going to put these on the website.
Okay. We have had price action go below the bottom of our fair auction, and close, which is, you know, that close is very, very important. Navigator has actually turned into a contra long indicator. On our daily, I'm looking at Navigator, we're actually almost right at the zero point of crossing from above zero to below zero. And that's the first time, by the way, that's happened since July in this whole move up. So, you know, when we had a breakout confirmation back in the middle of August to go long, we were buying dips, buying dips, buying dips. This is the first time in the middle of October here, this is the first time that we've actually said, you know, buying dips hasn't worked and we got our stop here and we're actually going to have to sit on our hands and figure out if we break below our weekly unfair low, which would mean that the longer term trend has actually been compromised also. But Navigator itself actually is another barometer, piece of the puzzle to where we can say, you know what, this is this other piece that, you know, that's providing some long information or some short information for us to leverage the bet.
So right now what you're seeing is that overall, in the current look of where gold is, on a weekly basis it broke down, it closed below on the mm-hmm. weekly. On the daily it's starting to break down, and the Navigator is turning lower, which is giving you further confidence that gold is in a potential downtrend that is shortable. Is that correct?
Yeah. Actually, gold on a daily had broken down last Friday.
A week ago.
Eight days ago, whatever.
Right.
On Friday, it actually confirmed it on a weekly that it had broken down. Because remember, the longer-term time frames are going to be a little bit more of a lagging trigger point, if you will.
Good. I like that. Yeah. Hey, good. Like, subliminal.
Thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah.
And as of 8 days ago or whatever, the previous Friday, we had actually found leverage points to get short on a shorter-term time frame and trade into the bottom on a weekly, that fair auction unfair low on a weekly time frame. So to summarize what I just said, we actually had confirmation for the first time since the middle of August that the trend had changed on a daily the previous week. And these are all things that, you know, it depends, you know, I can't hold anything too long personally myself because I don't believe in long-term investing as much as long-term trading. You know, I mean, I don't know how to state that any better, but I don't want to give back too much to the marketplace if I'm wrong. I would rather put stops a little bit more relatively tighter and get stopped out three times and be right, you know, eight times than to get stopped out one time and be right two times.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think the statistical sample is actually more weighted for my style of trading that way. And, you know, you have a comment?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's interesting is I think, you know, I just wanted to extract out something that you said that is probably a little nugget that really needs to be brought out here, and that is it's very difficult, probably the most difficult trade in the world is something that you mentioned that I just need to restate, or not restate, I need to say again, and that is the most difficult trade is sitting on your hands.
Yeah.
The most difficult trade is doing nothing. Because, you know, you're thinking, well, I could be doing this, I could be doing that, I could be in. The fact is, though, that there are times that it makes sense just to do nothing. Now, there's got to be a market somewhere that something's going on that maybe would have been better than just being in cash, clearly. But if it's not something that you're involved with and that you are ready to act on, then it's, you know, there's no point of it. And when you're sitting on your hands, really, whether it's a minute, a day, a week, a month, whatever it may be, if you're doing any kind of rules-based trading, and this is really, you know, talking about trading rather than longer-term investing, the fact is that you need to have those confidence levels, because other than that, there's nothing that you can go by.
Right, I agree fully. And going back into the core of statistical analysis and probabilities and data sample sets, I mean, if you trade one instrument, right, let's just say you trade S&Ps, and a lot of people out there who are traders trade S&Ps exclusively, and they watch this thing bounce around all day long every day. And then when they look back at it later, they were going, wow, if I just leveraged everything on that particular long, went to Tahiti for a week and came back, I'd have been, instead of getting chopped up all the time. So that's kind of the core of really the TPR reports, which are really like, okay, we're going to look at multiples, sample sets, all right? And we're going to provide those sample sets that are actually acting a certain way where the probabilities we feel are relatively high. And you can, you know, talking about sitting on your hands, well, it's also appropriate what you just said about, hey, let's find those extremely ripe setups where, you know, I'm just going to throw something out there that's a sample. Hey, let's wait until we're coming down into the bottom of an unfair low on four different time frames and they all coincide. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to just surf the entire marketplace, get a report on it, delivered right into your mailbox, basically, that says, hey, this is the setup that is, we feel, is very relatively high probable to go up.
Yep.
Here's your stopping point. And, you know, you don't really have to sit on your hands that often. You can leave that money out of cash and put it to work in another high probability situation. Yet, if you are trading a certain world of instruments that you live in and it's finite and you don't want all that information, sometimes the most appropriate thing is to sit on your hands and wait for those setups to happen.
Right. Well, let's talk about the S&Ps for a second. Let's talk about the futures. And maybe talk. A lot of people talk about the cash markets because there's different numbers there. But the futures have a much greater trading range. Well, I shouldn't say range. A trading time for times, because they actually trade in the evenings and the mornings, and they have during the week a 15-minute break. That's it. So you can get a much greater data sample, even though in the nighttime it doesn't trade as much in terms of volume, but you still get the ranges and there's, you know, the after hours. But let's look at the S&Ps for a second on the futures. Let's do it quickly and then go over to the cash market and talk about that. Let's talk about the weeklies on the S&P futures.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, interesting event happened. In fact, I did a video on this topic Friday morning before the sell-off happened. And I had been talking about the inflection points based on our information around 1449 to 1451. And if it was, if that area was breached coming from the upside going into below there, that was going to be a huge leverage point, because that particular unfair high on a weekly coincided very closely with some unfair highs that had happened before on our daily previous fair auctions. And I pointed that out explicitly many times. And we also had a smaller time frame, 240-minute, that I paired against that was around 1448. So you had 1448, 1449, and 1451 as a general amalgamation of inflection points that if we had gotten below there, or really stayed above it for that matter for the longs, that would have been a very confirming signal to either get long or get short. Now, I'm playing both sides of the marketplace here, and I know people are going, well, what does that mean? You know, it's but
good. Glad you caught that.
Well, the good news is, you know, you would need to sit on your hands, so to speak, as you just talked about, until one of those areas was picked out to be, you know, the move that was going to happen, and all these confirmations really give you the convictions to get on one side of the marketplace or the other. Now, I picked the short side because, you know, we were at the top of a weekly box. We had, weekly unfair high. We were reaching some areas on shorter time frames that were actually critical from a resistance standpoint. And I could have been wrong as rain in those videos. But, you know, with stops right above, you know, what's the pain level? It's really relative on a relative scale, zero pain, because I would play that particular trade in that game 100 times out of 100 with that kind of leverage in my favor to be wrong and maybe miss a four-point stop relative to making a 20-point target.
Right.
And again, we're talking about risk-reward scenarios. So, you know, was there some very apparent information to get short on that day? Absolutely. Did you have to sit on your hands and kind of wait for it to be breached? Yes.
Yeah. So what about on the cash market? Let's kind of get some definite levels. I put a post up that will be, you'll see, late Sunday night into Monday morning, about the levels on the cash market and some of the things that I'm seeing. And one of the things I mentioned was that the Navigator is, you know, when this whole rally over the last, let's call it 4 weeks or so, you know, that move that we saw really was not confirmed very well with the Navigator, as an example. And
right.
It wasn't really confirmed very well with our T-score, although the T-score kind of bounced around a little bit more than that. It's not as smooth. But when you look at the cash market, there was clearly some tops that we kept hitting above. And at the same time, there was a lot of fill in because it kept on bouncing around. So it was, you know, that bell curve was getting really fat and meaty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
Well, you know, my favorite confirmation as far as it goes with Navigator is if we have higher highs in price action and actual price action, i.e. the S&P cash market, like you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and lower highs over that same period that is happening in Navigator. And so lower peaks in that particular indicator. And that's just telling you that you should be trading those inflection points again from the short side in this instance, instead of looking for some kind of long breakout above these inflection points. And, you know, I don't know if you're showing them the daily chart here. Even the weekly chart, which had the daily is going to show Navigator making lower highs as price action is actually making relatively similar highs. When that starts happening, you really can, you know, really, I mean, no, not step on the gas pedal as far as your trades, but really you can feel, you know, a little bit more conviction. It's just another pressure point in your favor, in this case from the short side.
Now, when you look at that, where do you see the support levels of the S&P cash? Because there's a couple of, it's a little tight in this range, right?
Yeah, what symbol are you actually using?
Use the SPX, SPX index.
SPX, just want to make sure we're on the same page here. Andrew, I'm looking. Well, actually, we're at a support level right now.
Right, it bounced right off it.
Yeah, temporary support at around 1430, right. or there's a little bit of a range there between 1425 and 1430. Again, you know, this is not to the tick. You've got to provide in your mind a little bit of noise, if you will, that you know this particular product or price action can have some variance around standard deviation, actually, if you will. But let me look at our weekly here, and let me just pull that up and just kind of give you a real-time analysis here of what's going on weekly, in my opinion. You've actually got some targets on the downside that are really kind of rangy, if you will. You've got our first target around 1402. Let's just call it 1400 because we've got some other support areas around there. Mm-hmm. And then you've got probably an extreme downside target right now, 1390.91. And then if we get below there, you will have confirmed that the long-term uptrend really will have been broken. Mm-hmm. So below 1390.91, around in that area, you're really going to have some quick moving markets going down because it's going to have to go down significantly to find some support after that.
Yeah, I think I targeted something like I think 1375 was the low.
Yep.
On that, and then you break that, and it's like really gets quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, we're sitting precariously at support on a daily, and we're also sitting, you know, just, you know, we're in the middle of our fair auction on our weekly. So, I mean, you know, this thing really could have more downside and still be considered in a long trend, mm-hmm. long-term. But, you know, again, if the daily is broken Monday and we kind of surf below this 1425 to 1430 area in particular, we're probably going to start seeing some lower numbers, i.e. that 1400 level and then maybe even 1390.
Right, exactly. So. And then let's just end it up with treasuries, you know, the 10-year. And I know that's something that is kind of, it's been very volatile. It's been pretty wild action, you know, with all the things that are going on around the world. But kind of give me a quick take on the treasury.
I'm actually pulling up right now, Andrew. I got to tell you, you know, this particular market used to basically be an inverse relationship almost to the stock market, as you know. Mm-hmm. But as the, you know, world currency situation has kind of, you know, Europe, the euro dollar, couple of other currencies out there, which are relatively unstable, the United States, for some reason, treasury market has really been kind of a go-to instrument for security and safety. So regardless of where the stock market has been going down, or going up, this particular, you know, I don't have to tell anybody this, our rates are like, you know, just, you know, insanely low.
Right.
And that, you know, bond market being high in the air, predicts those rates to be low. So it's a guaranteed tick by tick inverse relationship. So what I want to say here is that, you know, on the 10 year, considering that there's no biased opinion about where this market should be, I know we both probably feel that rates are too low relative to what, you know, our economy is going through, and what the risk is of holding U.S. Treasuries. Forget all that.
Right.
You know, we want to look at, technically speaking, what the score is here. So we actually broke down this past week and settled confidently below our weekly unfair low, which was at 133.06 on the 10-year future. All right. Now, we closed around 133.12 at the end of the week. We've got some massive support around 132 even, which it kind of bounced right off of from that goes back into actually September of last year. So 132 is a very critical, or in that general area, 132 is a very critical support level for this particular product, even though we have broken and closed below our weekly unfair low. So the long-term trend is what I'm saying here, has been broken at least temporarily on a weekly. Now, on a daily, we actually started using this as leverage, and I commented on these leverage points to get short and try to meet those unfair lows on the weekly in the videos I've done over the past 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, we actually broke down technically daily back in the middle of September. So the weekly has now confirmed that move in the 10-year to be a broken down. And again, remember, weekly views take precedence over daily views, over precedence over 240s, over 60s, and on down the road. So, you know, the 10-year has found some temporary support at 132. We did have a breakage of rules around 133.06. So right now, you know, we have the trend has changed on a long-term basis. The daily has now been confirmed by the weekly, and you're looking at resistance levels to short this instrument with, of course, stops above, because nothing's guaranteed, and our information, even though I feel puts probabilities in your favor, can be wrong.
You know, just to sum up everything you said here, I think every instrument we went through is breaking down.
Yeah, even treasuries, which is weird, at the same time as the equities market. And that's not a good sign. I mean, you know, usually you want to have treasuries as a safety place, and that means confidence in general in the U.S. period probably has been compromised to some degree this past week.
It's really weird. I mean, you know, the fact is that, you know, we've been seeing correlations across asset classes pretty much, you know, the thing that people say these days is, you know, risk on, risk off and whatever. And it is kind of fascinating, though, that the bond market has had a mind of its own. And I do agree with you, the currency. We're not even going to get into the discussion of currencies and the euro. It's been just, you know, crazy. Talk about, yeah, you know, mutant trading information.
Yeah.
But you know what we'll do? We'll put all these on there because I think that this requires a little bit of a visual. And I know that you have the daily video over on TASS Professional. Mm-hmm. You know, John, just to let everybody know, John, basically these algorithms were initially created for institutions. It's on the Bloomberg platform. Some of these are, you know, an extra add-on. And there's also other ways that you can actually access these. But essentially, these, you know, the ones that we created for what we're doing on the retail subscription side has been all about, you know, creating something that can, you know, find these fast zones and find these areas of inflection points and the where the odds are in your favor. Not everything works, of course, all the time, but, you know, it's what it is. John speaks around the world. He's actually going to be speaking in Hong Kong, I think Sydney. He's going to be in New York shortly, speaking at conferences. So, you know, we'll kind of bring him back for that. And, man, there's a lot of information that you provide. I appreciate that.
Anytime, Andrew. My pleasure.
All right. Hey, John Logan from TASS Professional. Put all these information on there. We'll see you soon, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye. Now, I know that was a lot to digest all in a sitting, and I think that really if you can make sure to take a look at the charts, you'll follow along much easier to understand very simply these unfair highs and the statistical relevance, and it's just very simply horizontal lines that give you the information, and it's a culmination of a lot of data and statistical calculations to come up with that. But this is, I think, something that is very important. It's a kind of a new age and a new breed of technical analysis, not your grandpa's technical analysis, which may or may not have been good. And what happened here is, you know, looking for something more than just a slight change or a continuation, but looking for these, as John said, these inflection points. These are the tenets of what we use for the trigger point research alerts and for some of the models that we're working on right now that you're going to hear about soon. So if you haven't checked it out, you get a 2-week free trial of trigger point research alerts, the breaking up, the breaking down, the bounces, and you will find that you'll get an email immediately once a stock breaks appropriate levels and has many of the conditions that we talked about as we did a moment ago with John that line up and that gives you the advantage of a trade in your favor. Now, again, not all of those are, you know, going to work out very well, but, you know, the last several, we had one or two that were not working out so well. Matter of fact, they came down about 12 or 13%. But the last five or six of them have been up about 8, 9, 10%, and some of them very quickly in a matter of days. And we give you these price targets and stops and all the things you need to know in either an email or a text SMS. So you get them live, active, and immediately. Next week, we have coming up Das. Everybody's asked for him. Where is he? Well, he's been out and about writing, as he always does, finding the good stuff to talk about. And we're going to have him on the show, as well as we're going to be discussing some alternative assets, some alternative investments that may be very timely to discuss. If you want to get in touch with me, just simply write. Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I do a good job, hopefully, of getting back to you. I try to get every email answered that I can. And, of course, I've been doing a lot more on Twitter lately. Hopefully, you do have an account already. Just follow Andrew Horowitz. It's one word, Andrew Horowitz. And I put out a good amount of the things that are going on there on what's happening on the blog. You get instant access to information once it comes out. And I think that is something that you should be doing and following. I hopefully provide a good amount of data flow throughout the day as I see it, news we pass through that's very interesting, as well as linking to other places that you'll find interesting, save you a lot of time, aggravation. So that's over at Twitter. Other than that, I want to thank you for joining me as usual. Lots of exciting things happening and lining up for some very interesting stock moves this week. We will again Twitter and talk about and blog and have that all lined up for you. I want to thank you for being there for me, and hopefully we're doing some good work for you as well. Talk to you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.